Welcome to Fanboy News Network, your guide to geek culture. I'm Jeff Harris.
And I'm Ian Crowfeather.
You'll notice Daniel's not with us again this week. Daniel's off doing something where he's being pampered and waited on hand and foot with his wife.
I think it might have something to do with washing his socks.
You know, whatever. So as usual, when Daniel's gone, I find a co-host. This week is my friend Ian Crowfeather, who is literally one of my oldest friends.
Yes.
We've known each other since we were teenagers.
Teenagers.
And if you know how old we are, you know that's a long time.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of the movies that we consider the geek classics, we actually saw during their original runs together.
Yes.
And with that, before we get into any of the subject matter, a little bit of news I ran across today. David Huddleston, who is probably best known to most fans these days as the Big Lebowski from the movie, Big Lebowski, passed away today. Now, he has a ton of credits. Probably the most prominent in geek culture outside of Big Lebowski is Blazing Saddles.
Yes.
He was one of the townspeople. In fact, I believe he was the mayor.
Yes, he was.
So, you know, very significant actor for a lot of people's developmental movies, even though he was always sort of, oh, hey, he's that guy.
Yes.
But, you know, a significant enough place in geek culture history that at least warrants a nod to his passing.
Yes.
And this year has been rough on famous people. Yeah, I mean, you always lose people every year.
Yeah.
So, anyway, with today, since we've got Ian here, so what have you seen recently, Ian?
In
the theaters.
Seen,
yeah, what movies have you seen recently?
Recently in the theaters. The most recent thing I went and saw, and I want my money back, or actually I want the time back, is I went and saw Batman versus Superman.
Yeah, which we have discussed extensively on this podcast. In fact, my last co-host, Jim, and I gave a pretty thorough, and by thorough I mean brutal, review. And we interestingly hold that thought because we will be revisiting that later in the podcast.
Yes.
Well, as I had threatened last episode, I did in fact finally get to the theater and saw Ghostbusters.
And I unfortunately did not.
So now, I'm not going to rehash Leslie Jones' Twitter battle because we talked about that last week or last episode. And we talked about the fact that trailer makers apparently hate Melissa McCarthy.
Mm-hmm.
And I can say that that is still true because the movie presented in the Ghostbusters trailers is not an accurate reflection of the actual movie that was on screen. It was close. I mean, it wasn't terribly far off. But they did things like in the trailers, Patty, Leslie Jones' character,
mm-hmm.
Plays a lot like your stereotypical sassy black woman.
Yeah.
And that is not the character that appears on screen.
No, it's not.
So there's that. There's Melissa McCarthy. You know, it's interesting with Melissa McCarthy and Paul Feig movies. They are very smart scripts.
Yes.
And this was another very smart script. If you've ever seen Spy,
mm-hmm.
You know this. And this is another case of the thing I loved. Okay, first off, it's a good movie. Is it the best thing I've seen this year? No, but that's going to be a really hard bar in a year that included Captain America Civil War.
Okay, yeah.
But is it a good movie? Absolutely. Absolutely good movie. I will be owning it. I laughed. I enjoyed myself. And it's an unsurprising, considering the people involved, it's a very unproblematic movie. With the actresses they have involved, they never once stooped to a fat joke.
Which is a good thing.
Yeah, there's only one joke in the movie that even addresses the fact that Leslie Jones is black, and that appears in the trailer.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the theme of the movie is honestly about friendship.
Yeah.
But also the search for respectability.
Yeah.
The main drive for, and what's great is the old Ghostbusters, and I love the old Ghostbusters.
Yeah.
Obviously, I mean, you and I, and everyone else that's in this house we're recording in right now, used to play the Ghostbusters role-playing game.
Yep. Good old West End games.
And so there's a great love for Ghostbusters, and it's a great franchise. But this movie is fascinating. It almost reminds me of aspects of the role-playing game.
Mm-hmm.
Because what it's showing is that Ghostbusters is a strong enough concept that you can make changes to setting and characters, and it still holds up.
Mm-hmm.
So at no point is, you know, none of the characters are representative of the old characters. They are four, five, really, brand new characters who just happen to be in the Ghostbusters setting and doing much the same activity.
Yeah.
But their motivations are even different.
Mm-hmm.
Because in the original movie, it became very much about, hey, let's get rich capturing ghosts.
Yes.
The main thrust in this, they become the Ghostbusters because it's how they can further their research and prove their theories.
Okay.
There's never, in fact, any mention of trying to turn a profit.
Okay.
It's all about, no, we want to investigate. We want to prove our theories are correct.
Okay.
And that's the going theme. And it's great because it emphasizes the intellect of the characters.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it works really well. It's a different take. But one thing I love is they have expanded weaponry from the original series. Some of which, if you've read the ancillary material for the role-playing game, seems very familiar.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it works well. And I think that, yeah, you've got the naysayers. And I mean, there's two camps for those. I mean, having seen the movie now and looked at them, you have either the man babies.
Yep.
Who just, well, this movie wasn't made for me. No, it wasn't. But they are very much, I mean, that's the Furiosa test. They just don't like anything that's not dude bros, let's go.
Yeah.
And then there's the people who it's like, well, I grew up with Ray, Egon, Peter, and Winston, and I want those four guys. And that these aren't those four guys. These are four new characters, and they're dealing with things very differently.
Yeah.
So one thing I did find interesting, I learned after the fact, Leslie Jones' character, Patty, was the character originally written for Melissa McCarthy.
Okay.
But when Patty came on board, she lobbied for it because she felt she could bring something to it. So it's not like, oh, the non-scientist character is the black person. That's the part Leslie wanted. She felt she could really bring it to life, and she did.
Mm-hmm.
And again, her character, I love they represent, no, somebody can be someone who doesn't have a degree and still be very intelligent.
Yeah.
She brings knowledge that the other characters don't have that's actually the missing component for mm-hmm. them, which is, you know, understanding the history. And then you've got, you know, Chris Hemsworth playing really the stereotypical dumb blonde. I mean, literally, you look at dumb blonde characters throughout cinematic history, and that's the character that Hemsworth's playing. It's just those characters are usually female, and he's a guy playing that type.
Yeah.
And it works great, and you can tell he's having the time of his life.
Oh, I can imagine.
So, yeah, it's well worth your time and has one of the most entertaining credit sequences I've seen in a long time. And in true fashion that we've gotten used to in modern movie going, stay through to the bitter end of the credits. Especially if you're a fan of the old series, stay through to the bitter end.
What movie today do you not do that?
Well, you do it with everything. Not everyone pays off.
True.
But especially if you're looking at building a franchise.
Yeah.
And so I saw the movie 3 weeks into its run. And I went on a Saturday night and the theater was still packed.
Mm-hmm.
So it's still bringing people in. It's made back its budget already. It's basically where projections have it.
Yeah.
It didn't open at number one, but then again, it did open versus a Pixar movie.
Yeah, I could, yeah.
Yeah, that's that, you know, opening against Pixar or a Star Wars film or a Marvel film, you're probably not going to be number one. Doesn't mean you're not going to make money. It's just you're probably not going to be number one. So it's looking good, and the studio's apparently very happy. They are already talking sequel.
Yeah. The one thing from poking my nose into the background of the movie is, okay, hearkening to it, to the originals, and trying to stay in that theme. And it, the setting is still New York.
Yeah.
But the bulk of the movie is shot in Boston.
Mm-hmm.
And which to me, if anyone is familiar with Boston, you're going to recognize that it's Boston.
Yeah. And that was sort of, I honestly think it's just because, since one of the universities that's shown in the movie is, a New York university.
Yeah.
I think they wanted to keep that university mm-hmm. as a central theme within the movie. Otherwise, yeah, there's no reason not to set this movie in Boston.
Yeah.
Now, Boston's got a great history and would have worked just as well.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think they, I think in one regard, they left themselves open to, well, not, they didn't leave themselves open to, they left themselves out of something that they could have utilized in a future film, with a number of the historic events that have happened in Boston and being able to tie a ghost event
yeah.
To those historical events.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and to me, I could picture the Ghostbusters taking on the Boston Tea Party.
Sure.
So can't do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, little quick plug here.
Okay.
Earlier this week, I recorded an episode of our sister podcast, Don't Read the Latin.
Mm-hmm.
And this was, Jen and Michael decided to do an episode devoted to the entire Ghostbusters franchise.
Okay.
So it should come out the same week this episode goes up. So if you're interested in hearing more of my take and other people's take on the entire franchise, including the movies, the cartoon, the video game, and the role-playing game, listen to the upcoming episode of Don't Read the Latin, and you'll get to hear an earful of myself, Jen, Michael, Jim, and Jillian. It was a full house, and be prepared. Make sure you have a meal. This was a long episode.
Okay, I will do so.
So, yeah, so, I mean, that's it. It was a good movie. Now, some of the trailers.
Mm-hmm.
All right, we talked about this on Don't Read the Latin, and I do understand that, you know, representation matters, and these movies are popular for a reason. And, you know, more power to Tyler Perry. I think he's a brilliant comedy writer.
Mm-hmm.
But I really have a hard time wrapping myself around the Madea character. But okay. But clearly it works because they keep making these movies, but they're doing a Madea Halloween movie.
Okay, yeah.
And it is using horror movie tropes, and unclear from the trailer if there's actual supernatural events going on or not. But I will say this, as a horror movie fan, it is the first of the Madea movies I ever thought, maybe, just because it's using tropes I love.
Yeah.
Other than that, we have the, well, let's get into the other thing that's significant. This is the first episode we've recorded since San Diego Comic-Con.
Okay.
And I know one thing you and I have both done is gone out and looked at the trailers.
Yes.
That came out. And so, disregarding a lot of the other movies that get promoted at Comic-Con, where you sit there and going, why are you here?
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about the superhero movies, since they're mm-hmm. at least relevant to the subject yeah. matter at hand. So we got a bunch of new trailers for Comic-Con, almost unexpectedly so.
Yeah.
One of the things, so there was a lot of talk about, well, for years and years, one of the big issues has been, you know, at Comic-Con, you have the great Hall H presentations.
Yeah.
And that usually involves trailers. And one of the big things is the studio gets really mad when people videotape the trailers and put them online.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem, of course, is that happens because people want to see the trailers.
Yeah.
And the studio always had this, has the studios,
mm-hmm.
plural, have always had this thing, a lot of them, especially Warner Brothers, of they'll show a trailer at Comic-Con, but they don't want anyone else to see it.
Yeah.
Well, this year, they were talking about, we've got a great plan that should deal with the Hall H recorders. So said great plan turned out to be releasing the trailers within 30 minutes of showing them at Hall H. So their great plan was fine, we'll release the damn trailers.
Yeah.
And this is particularly surprising because they had announced, okay, we're going to show the new Suicide Squad trailer.
Yeah.
We're going to show the new Wonder Woman trailer. What no one expected is that they had actually cut a Justice League trailer.
Yeah.
So,
Is done really well compared to their previous outing with a number of those characters.
Well, and so let's look at this for a second. So one of the problems, of course, we were just talking about Melissa McCarthy and her bad track record of trailers not well representing her movies.
Correct.
And I think we can all agree that the trailers for Batman v Superman were god-awful.
Yeah, they were.
And, I mean, I certainly wasn't feeling it. Now, of course, I think it is fair to say, when I finally did go see the movie to give it a fair shake, that the trailers did, in fact, accurately represent the film.
Yeah, I told you the beginning, the middle, and the end.
So, and it gave you a good feel for the theme. So, all right, well, let's start with the expected one, Wonder Woman.
Yes.
Now, I've been hearing good buzz for Wonder Woman for a while.
Yeah.
And it's, what I've heard is, you know, it's not, I forget the woman who's directing its name, but, I know that it's, not Zack Snyder. And I think that's the most important thing.
Very important.
And the trailer just, it looks great. First off, one of Zack Snyder's greatest sins is what he does to color.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he desaturates the color. He goes for the grim. Apparently, if you see the Henry Cavill Superman suit in person, it's the same color scheme as the comic books.
Yeah.
But you see it on screen and it's this muted color because he puts those filters over it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, with Wonder Woman, that was not an issue. The director decided, no, we love color.
Decided I wanted to have a couple of notes up here. Patty Jenkins is the name you were looking for. That's the gal who directed Wonder Woman.
And what's her other credits?
Her other credits, as of note recently, we have as director, she's been doing the TV series Betrayal, which was just one season, it looks like. She did the TV series The Killing. Two episodes there.
Okay, that was a good series.
TV movie 5, which I thought was a great disappointment. It wasn't badly directed. The story just did not captivate me at all.
Mm-hmm.
But her history goes back to the TV series Entourage, Arrested Development. She is the director of Charlize Theron's Monster.
All right. So
she knows woman characters.
So she's got a good history.
Yeah.
So Wonder Woman, there are several things I really enjoy about what the choices they made.
Mm-hmm.
I think one of the boldest choices they make, but one of the smartest choices they make, is the decision to not set it in World War II, but to set it in World War I.
Which is a phenomenal first for a creation, for an origin story, considering that while they did World War II for the TV series, and they only managed it for one season because, well, it was a little expensive to be maintaining the period, especially back in the 1970s, and they moved it to more contemporary time. This is, I think, great. It really gives a fresh establishment for the age of the character, because obviously Superman was not around for World War One.
Right. Well, and I think it's bold for a couple other reasons. So, of course, Wonder Woman debuted during World War II, so it's really easy to set her in that era. What I heard one person say was that the decision to put it in World War One was, A, to avoid comparisons to Captain America, but B, to set it in a bit more ambiguous war.
Yes.
Because World War II, the Nazis are evil. There's no moral ambiguity in fighting the Nazis.
Oh, no, there ain't.
But the Germans of World War II is a little bit trickier.
Mm-hmm.
Not completely, but a little bit trickier. So it lets them address some other themes. It also, as that was pointed out, it's during the era of early suffragettes.
Yes.
And so the suffragette movement gets to be part of the movie.
Yes.
So some really just good choices for the theme of the character. And yeah, it looks good. The scenes are great. Chris Pine as Steve Trevor looks like he's doing a great job. Gal Gadot, you know, for what little she was in Batman v Superman, was probably the best thing about the movie.
Yeah.
And so a whole movie featuring her, it looks good. It has me interested. It has me actually anticipating the movie. And my wife already wants to cosplay the blue dress with the sword down the back from the trailer.
Okay. You
might want to check the computer. So the, So, I mean, that one looks great. Now, Justice League is a little bit of a trickier movie because, well, first off, it's still Zack Snyder.
Yeah.
And so right there, we've got the worries of, he already shown he can't behave.
Very true.
And I already have issues with his moral compass based on stuff that happened in Batman v Superman and some of his commentary about it.
Yep.
You know, and I'm specifically talking about his idea about why it's okay for Batman to kill.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think that what you have here, looking at the footage from the Justice League trailer, you don't have the color desaturation.
Correct.
That's the first thing I noticed. Hey, there's actual color in this film. It was a well put together trailer. It's like, I might be interested in this movie. So it was good introduction to the major characters. My wife has a huge crush on Jason Momoa.
Okay.
So seeing him as Aquaman, yeah, she's great. And he's, you know, he's an up-and-coming star. He's really well cast as Aquaman.
Mm-hmm.
I like the idea of a Polynesian actor playing Aquaman.
Yeah.
I think that's a great choice for the character and helps raise him above the dude, you talk to fish. and the trailer did a good job of portraying, no, this is somebody you take seriously.
Yeah.
And I think the other thing, and this is one of the things that the movie's got to work really hard against, is having the Flash in it.
Mm-hmm.
Because with the Flash, they have to deal with immediate comparisons to the TV series, which fans love.
Yeah.
So you cannot help but have Ezra Miller being compared to Grant Gustin.
Yeah.
It's going to happen right away, especially since they're both playing Barry Allen.
Mm-hmm.
So, and honestly, there's not enough of him on screen yet to make a real comparison.
No.
But the sequence was certainly one of the better sequences in the trailer.
Yeah.
So it looks hopeful. Now, here's the question I hear people asking. Because this did look like a great trailer.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is, it didn't feel Zack Snyder.
No, it didn't.
Now, one thing we know happened. After the studio saw everything that happened with Batman v Superman, they obviously got nervous because they want to turn this into a big franchise, and it came out of the gate limping. So, one of the first things they did was make Ben Affleck an actual producer on Justice League.
Yeah.
So they've, and a producer with creative control, which means Affleck can basically tell Snyder what to do. I think it's also safe to say, I don't think anyone's going to argue with me on this point, that as a filmmaker, Ben Affleck runs circles around Zack Snyder.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Affleck has won Oscars.
Yeah.
So he knows how to make a film, and he's an old school comic book geek. My suspicion, and a few other people's suspicion, is he might be stealth directing Justice League. And if that's the case, that's the best thing that could happen to this movie.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's, I am tentatively hopeful. However, I was also tentatively hopeful for Suicide Squad.
Mm-hmm.
And the trailers look great.
Yeah.
Whoever they got to do the trailers, great. They were interesting. The music helped. You know, having Bohemian Rhapsody, having Ballroom Blitz.
Yeah.
I mean, that did help. That was something smart, even though somebody pointed out, wait a minute, is this an homage to Wayne's World?
that I can understand. A couple of the notes when it comes to Suicide Squad, I wanted to go to right away, that I'm finding with great humor is the whole thing with the apparent Suicide Squad fans lobbying or pushing for Rotten Tomatoes to be shut down because of the reviews.
Well, first off, that's one of the stupidest things I've ever heard.
Yeah.
Because Rotten Tomatoes is an aggregator site.
Yeah. It doesn't create the reviews.
No.
It peels them off from everywhere else on the internet and simply averages them out.
Yeah.
So if you're getting a movie with a horrible amount of reviews...
Yeah, that's not Rotten Tomatoes' fault.
That's not Rotten Tomatoes' fault, no.
They were claiming. But yeah, they were claiming, even though it's... Unless I am wrong, I think somebody pointed out that Warner Brothers owns a share of Rotten Tomatoes' parent company. So it's a stupid thing altogether. Well, and here's the thing. So the reviews I'm hearing on Suicide Squad are that it is, in fact, not a good movie. And a little disappointing. I'd had hopes.
Yeah.
Although from the beginning, I mean... I've never bought into anything I've seen of Jared Leto's Joker.
I've had trouble accepting it.
And I understand it. The problem is we've had, Heath Ledger is a hard act to follow.
He is.
A really hard act to follow. And in this context, so is Mark Hamill.
Yeah.
And so, you know, trying to bring out a really great Joker performance is, you know, there's going to be baggage on that character, no matter what. And, you know, here's the problem. Jared Leto's one of those guys that, you know, I've seen him in movies. I mean, the only movie I know for sure I've ever seen him in, though, is Fight Club.
Mm-hmm.
And someone had to point out to me, oh, yeah, that was Jared Leto. He's an actor that's never made an impression on me. Now, that doesn't mean he's a bad choice. You know, other actors I've seen before that didn't make great impressions on me include Chris Evans.
Mm-hmm.
And Chris Hemsworth.
Mm-hmm.
And they now are, you know, flying high because they got the right vehicles. Well, the thing I hear is, A, yeah, no one knows what to do with the Joker in the movie. And B, guess he's barely in it.
Yeah.
And one thing I heard from a lot of reviews are a lot of the scenes that appear in the trailers don't actually appear in the movie.
That's not surprising. There are a handful of movies where I have to say I was disappointed. I'm going to jump to one that simply because I was a serious fanboy when it came to it, and that was the movie The Incredibles, which finally, you know, is getting around to potentially seeing a sequel arrive.
About time.
Well, there was a scene in the trailer that's not in the movie at all, and it was one of the scenes that won me over immediately, and that's the middle-aged superhero who's going to get back into being a superhero. He goes to put his super suit on, sucks his gut in, relaxes his muscles after he gets the suit on, and he busts his belt buckle, and it shoots across the room. That's in the trailer. It's nowhere in the movie.
Yeah. 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 So, you know, we've seen that before, but I hear from what I understand there is like things that probably would have helped the movie.
Yeah, it could have.
Weren't in the final cut. And here's the thing, because there's like, oh, look how inclusive we are. We've got all these female characters. We have all these different race characters.
Yeah.
And the best quote I heard, and I haven't seen the movie yet. I probably will go see it, but not right away. I still haven't seen Star Trek Beyond, and everyone whose opinions I trust liked the movie, so I need to go see it.
Yeah.
But the quote I heard is, inclusion is not the absence of bigotry.
Okay.
You know, just because you're not being directly bigoted doesn't mean you're actually being inclusive.
Okay.
So, yeah, and that's... So, you know, I mean, we will eventually see, but I have not heard great things. And that's a shame because Suicide Squad is an interesting enough concept that they could have done something with.
Yeah.
And they've got good actors in the cast.
Yeah. I this isn't by any means a negative remark towards Will Smith. Will Smith has proven a number of times that he can become a different person mm-hmm. in the roles that he's in. There are frequent instances, though, where he's playing simply a exaggerated version of himself, which is not bad. He does it well enough. It's likable. Mm-hmm. His previous superhero outing, Hancock, I loved.
Yeah, it was a good movie.
A good movie.
And had a great twist.
When seeing the trailers for Suicide Squad, I'm like, okay, he's getting a chance to tap into what he was doing for Hancock, but here it's the actual full-blown, I can be a cold-blooded killer.
Yeah.
Which I think fleshes that out.
I can certainly understand why Will Smith took the film.
Yeah.
Great opportunity. But... yeah, I will see for myself,
mm-hmm.
but what I'm hearing is not promising, and that's a shame, because this could have been the Band-Aid that DC needed.
Yeah.
For the films. And it looks like we're going to, I love one joke somebody made, though. Well, Suicide Squad flopped, so DC's now waiting for Godot.
And based on the trailers.
Yeah.
Yeah, the chemistry that is very evident between Chris Pine,
yeah,
and Godot as Wonder Woman and Steve Trevor, I think is phenomenal from the very little that they've done. Yeah. Chris Pine has demonstrated to a great extent that he's not typecastable.
No, he's a good actor. And well, here's the thing, because Chris Pine is an actor that I didn't really know before Star Trek.
I didn't know him either.
I didn't know him. I hadn't really seen anything he'd done. And, you know, he comes on and he does Kirk fine.
Yeah.
I have no problem with his Kirk. But he, other things he's done since, it does show, okay, he has range.
Yeah.
He can do things. And I think taking on Steve Trevor, so taking on another iconic character, where, let's face it, done incorrectly, there could be great temptation to make Steve Trevor like Jim Kirk.
Yeah.
And they avoided it.
Yes, they did.
So I am, I have to say, I love, again, old school comic book fan, read a lot of the old 40s Wonder Woman,
mm-hmm.
a lot of the original stuff. So the fact that the character of Ida Candy is in the movie at all makes me happy. And,
yeah.
And the actress playing her, so she is, the actress friend from Shaun of the Dead.
Yeah.
And she also did a TV show I loved, and it only got half a season, called Studio 60.
Yeah.
So, great actress, and her one scene on screen shows, oh no, this is going to be good. So yeah, I am hopeful. Now, the other thing I want to talk trailer-wise from San Diego,
mm-hmm.
and this also veers us into TV, they had trailers for the CW shows.
Yeah.
And... Arrow, okay, so I still watch Arrow,
mm-hmm.
But the last season and a half of Arrow has been not as good as its earlier incarnations. And the last season of Arrow really suffered. They've really got to do some work to bring it up, and the trailer doesn't tell me if they are or aren't.
No.
It doesn't fill me with hope. Now, I can still watch the show.
Yeah.
I can still enjoy the show. It's just with the disappointment of knowing it's not as good as it could be.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the actors are fantastic.
Yeah.
The problem is not the actors.
No, it's not.
It's the writing.
Yeah.
It's purely the writing. One thing I'm really hoping they're going to do, they need to do, they've hit the point where it's time to ditch the flashbacks.
Yeah.
They have served their purpose. They drag the story down, and they're frankly becoming stupid.
Mm-hmm.
It's time to just end them. Flash doesn't use the flashbacks unless it needs them.
Yeah.
It's not a regular part of the show. So I think they can afford to get rid of the flashbacks. I think they need to get rid of the flashbacks.
Yeah.
So I've seen what they're doing with Arrow. I'm fine with them beefing up the Curtis Holt character.
Mm-hmm.
I want to see them turn him into Mr. Terrific.
That would be a great thing to see.
You know, I mean, that's what they kind of promised since they brought him on the show.
Yeah.
but I want to see what they go on. Flash, on the other hand, and again, it's the same producers.
Mm-hmm.
But Flash is just, I think the problem is, I think they siphon all their good writers over to Flash.
It's entirely possible.
And Flash is just, it is working so good. Now, one, I like the cast better on Flash. I love Arrow,
mm-hmm.
but I think Flash has a slightly stronger cast.
Yeah.
But they're certainly getting better writing. Also with Flash, since they've gone full four-color superhero, you know, they can do things. I mean, the fact that they are doing Flashpoint, or a variation on the Flashpoint storyline, so they're doing a, you know, Barry altered the timeline.
Yeah.
Story. Looks just great. I can't wait. And I can't wait to see who they're bringing on. I know that, this is interesting. Tom Felton from the Harry Potter movies is going to be a regular this season. I can't wait to see what they're going to do with him.
Yeah.
They get really stellar guest stars.
Yeah.
I mean, for a TV show, especially a TV show on CW, mm-hmm. they have some good people coming on that show.
Yeah.
And so it just, it looks so good. And I'm so anticipating where they're going to go. And one thing I loved, I was like, okay, they did the Flashpoint.
Mm-hmm.
They set it up last season. And you do have that moment of, oh my God, Barry, what did you do?
Yeah.
But somebody pointed out the beauty of it. Barry did something stupid.
Mm-hmm.
But Barry wasn't being stupid for the sake of the script. Barry did something stupid that was completely in character.
Yeah.
I don't mind characters doing something dumb as long as it's not derailing the character to do the dumb thing.
Yeah.
But by keeping the mistake perfectly in character,
mm-hmm.
I have no problem with it. Move the story along. Great.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. As long as you're staying, you're keeping your characters true. Fantastic. Let's go for it.
Yeah.
And I think Supergirl is actually going to benefit from the move to CW from what I've seen.
It's going to.
Because let's face it, it was a CW show on CBS.
Yeah.
And I think it suffered for it. One thing I'm hoping is I have a secret hope that however they solve the time travel storyline, because no one thinks it's going to go the entire season,
mm-hmm.
that whatever they do to solve the timeline problem merges the universes of Supergirl and the rest of the CW shows.
That would be, I think, a good thing, considering whom is being brought in this new season for Supergirl.
Well, you mean the actor playing Superman?
Yes.
Well, the fact that they've decided, you know what, screw it, we're putting Superman on the show.
Yeah.
No more of this, you're not going to get to see his face, which was taken to some dumb levels.
It was. That was really like, really? Come on now.
I like the actor.
Yeah.
I didn't watch much of Teen Wolf, but what I did, he was on and I liked.
Mm-hmm.
He's certainly got the look for the character.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I haven't actually seen any scenes. I've seen pictures.
Yeah.
He looks great. I'm trusting because I've seen him act in other things that mm-hmm. his performance is going to be fine.
Yeah.
I'm just looking forward to see how they do it. One thing somebody said, we have the pure joy that has never happened before. The actor playing Jimmy Olsen is taller than Superman.
Yeah, there's one thing, and I don't know if they'll have the story element where they would be bringing it about, but that the character Jeremiah Danvers, is you know there, and of course that's Dean Cain,
mm-hmm.
a Superman alumnus, and it's like it'd be amusing. Could you see them playing up the gag with his character encountering Superman?
So I saw
that look that they might do between two characters.
Because I have a theory. So you've been watching the show, right?
Yes.
Okay, so you know all about the Hank Henshaw fake-out.
Yeah.
And that it turned out it was John Jones.
Yes.
So, but there still was a real Hank Henshaw.
Yeah.
And that real, in the comics, Hank Henshaw is the cyborg Superman.
Mm-hmm.
And Hank Henshaw and Jeremiah Danvers died at each other's hands.
Yeah.
So my suspicion, since there's this whole thing of, well, somebody has Jeremiah's body at least.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's this whole thing of they're searching for what happened to Jeremiah Danvers.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're going to have Hank Henshaw possessing Jeremiah's body and have him be the cyborg Superman.
Okay.
So they're going to have Dean Cain as that character.
Yeah.
That's my theory. I've seen nothing to back it up other than if I were in the writer's room on the show, that's what I would pitch.
Yeah.
Although I have to say, I don't think I've geeked out on anything as hard as I geeked out on the moment they revealed that he was actually the Martian Manhunter. And here's the thing. I heard some people suspected it early on.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't, because I thought they were teasing the cyborg Superman.
Yeah.
But halfway through the episode where they did the reveal, I went, wait a minute.
Mm-hmm.
Because in that episode, they started dropping some subtle hints. By the end of it, I was like, oh my God, he's going to be the Martian Manhunter. Please let him be the Martian Manhunter. Yes, this is how sad a comic can. I had tears in my eyes.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I've talked about this on the show before, but.
Yeah.
And so I want to see where they go forward. Because here's the thing I want now.
Mm-hmm.
I want scenes between the Martian Manhunter and Superman.
Yeah.
He's on the show now. Yeah. We're going to get those scenes. I cannot wait. So yeah, so I'm really happy with everything I'm seeing on the CW shows. Except Arrow. And you know what? I enjoyed Legends of Tomorrow,
mm-hmm.
but I always looked upon it. It's the dumb show.
Yeah.
And my biggest problem with Legends of Tomorrow, it was fun to watch, but I kept watching going, all these characters are idiots.
Yeah.
It was the idiot ball plot. So it's definitely the weaker cousin of the entire set.
Yeah.
I'm hoping this year with the inclusion of the Justice Society that maybe it gets better.
Mm-hmm.
So that's everything coming out of Comic-Con, except one last thing. One last tiny detail about San Diego Comic-Con.
Okay.
I am sure there was comic book news at the convention. I'm sure I read even some comic book news.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is nothing significant enough for me to go, oh yeah, that's really cool, and remember it.
Yeah.
And it's a complaint. You've said you've heard from other quarters that it's Comic-Con, and there really was no comics this year.
No, there wasn't. I think that the focus has really become more Hollywood or television than anything else.
Mm-hmm.
Which is kind of like, okay, yeah, there's a lot of comic book related material coming out with television mm-hmm. and movies, but where are the comic books?
Yeah, and you know, the comics still get representation just at other conventions.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know. Take from what you will. So, yeah, I the only other thing I know right now, as we are recording,
mm-hmm.
Gen Con.
Yeah.
Has kicked off. So this is, you know, I went to Gen Con when I worked for Wizards of the Coast.
Mm-hmm.
It is a show that has certainly been overshadowed by other shows, but for the role-playing tabletop industry.
Yeah.
It's still considered a big deal. And I have a lot of friends that are there. I'm going to be curious to hear what's coming out, especially since you have what is effectively the resurrection of White Wolf.
Yeah.
Occurring right now. And there might be some cool stuff out of that. And, you know, I have a lot of people who are saying, yeah, there's some other cool stuff coming down the pike. So here's the thing. I know that it's hard with franchise rights these days, but kind of rolling back to what we were talking about at the top of the show, I did a panel at NorwestCon this year entitled, I don't remember the exact title, but it was basically, what old role-playing games still hold up?
Yeah.
And interestingly, every single one of us had the same game at the top of our list. Ghostbusters.
Yeah.
Basically West End. West End's West D6 End. System. So Ghostbusters and Star Wars. But interestingly, everyone led with Ghostbusters.
Mm-hmm.
And it was an elegant system.
Yeah.
And it was an easy system for non-gamers to learn.
Yeah.
So if somebody was coming to the game as just a Ghostbusters fan,
yeah,
they could still figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
And if you were a gaming fan who was coming to it as a gamer who wanted to play Ghostbusters, it wasn't annoying.
No, it wasn't.
So I have hope. I want to see that system come back mm-hmm. in a big way. And I would love to see the resurrection of the Ghostbusters role-playing game.
Yeah, it would be great to see it.
It would be.
But
that's A, getting the system, and B, getting the license.
Yeah, West End Games, they're phenomenal success with Star Wars. Ghostbusters, a clear neck-and-neck outing as a gaming system. Their attempt at Indiana Jones was a little lackluster, but A, And then they did try to release a just D6 series of books as a universal gaming system, which unfortunately didn't go anywhere. I bought them. They had a great potential. But that was at the beginning of the end. Mm-hmm. Too many people at the top thinking they had really good ideas, and the left hand didn't know what the right hand was doing. And well,
the demise of many, having been part of the industry, the demise of many a company. So yeah, that's something I wouldn't mind seeing, but we'll see what comes out of it. And the only other thing, now on this show, we don't often talk about computer games.
No,
because, you know, I do some gaming. I'm not an avid computer gamer, mm-hmm. but I play some games. But we're on the release of No Man's Sky.
Yeah.
And I'm really curious because we are kind of seeing the growing phenomena of the procedurally generated games.
Yeah.
Where the experience isn't always the same. And No Man's Sky is the real big coming out of that style of game.
Yeah.
And, you know, I forget the exact number because it's just this ridiculously huge number. But the number of potential planets in the game,
mm-hmm.
they said to visit each planet for 1 second would take 586 years.
Yeah.
There's that much content in the game. It's designed in the way that even the developers don't know everything in the game.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, that is fascinating. Now, there's an outstanding question. What's gameplay like?
Yeah. What is the gameplay going
to
be?
And that's what I'm waiting to hear.
Especially with... Obviously, if the developers don't know what all the content is within a game, there's algorithms creating the content. What interesting things are going to turn up?
Yeah, so I'm not going to get it right away. I probably am going to get it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm fascinated. I want to see, but I'm going to wait to hear some reviews first. That's how I do a lot of games, though.
Yeah,
it is very rare for me to buy a game right out of the gate, just because I want to hear. Because, you know, who wants to waste their money on a bad game?
Mm-hmm.
So I'll wait a little bit, but I'm curious. Although I will say I'm also interested in another game that has some procedural generation in it. Have you heard of a game called We Happy Few?
The name I've heard, what the gameplay, what it is specifically, I have not.
So it's a survival horror game.
Okay.
Set in 1960s London.
Okay.
And it's an alternate 1960s London where everyone is blissed out on a drug called joy.
Okay.
And so the idea is you have to survive. And joy, if people think you're being a killjoy, they turn violent.
Oh, okay.
So you have to at least sometimes actually take the drug yourself. To sounds keep a certain balance.
That sounds almost a little like Cthulhu.
Well, yeah, because the drug is a hallucinogen.
Mm-hmm.
So whenever you're on the drug, you're not sure of what you're really seeing.
Okay.
But you have to be really careful how you act when you're not on the drug. And if you die before a checkpoint, you have to start over again. And where you're starting over from is a new procedurally generated scenario. So you're not restarting where you left off. You're starting over fresh and new, not knowing what situation you're in. The graphics look great.
That's going to make dying a frustration for some.
Yeah, but it's, again, as a horror fan,
yeah,
I'm fascinated. The graphics look really interesting. And the concept has me intrigued. Now, like with No Man's Sky, I'm going to wait to see what people say about it.
Yeah.
But I'm fascinated. And again, I'm fascinated by the idea of when you start the game new or you start over again, you're in a new scenario. A, to me, that really adds to replayability of a game.
Yeah.
Which, let's face it, that's, you know, one thing you really want in games, if the game is replayable. Because I've replayed games before. The one I can think of, the one game I replayed through twice was Red Dead Redemption. Because yep. I really like the game and I really like the story and I like the sandbox aspects.
Mm-hmm.
But it was still the same story.
Yeah.
So I have a real hope for what procedural generation can be.
Yeah.
So anyway, with that, the only other thing, where are we at timestamp wise? You can see the computer. I can't.
We are hitting 50 minutes.
All right. So we're getting near end time. So one thing I want to say for anyone who's, our regular listeners wondering why does this sound weird? So we're recording at Ian's house.
Yes.
Ian has a microphone that, I think it's fair to say is far superior to my own. Although, interestingly, from the same company.
Yes.
Because I have a Snowball, and this is a Yeti.
The Yeti Pro.
So this, the part of the reason I bring this up at all is last weekend, we had the first recording session for the other show we're producing, Family Skeletons.
Yes.
And this is the microphone we recorded on.
Yeah.
Now, with a much different setup and in a much better setup room for recording. But I this is sort of my segue. So we are moving on Family Skeletons.
Yes.
And everyone is excited. We had a great first session. There was some hiccups. It was a learning experience.
Yeah.
But nothing horrible. We got some really good tracks down. And I think we're off and running. We learned a lot.
Yeah.
I'm really happy. And I see that great thing of, you know, having worked on a script and to finally hear the actors actually performing it.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's going to be exciting. We're still tentatively shooting for an October release.
Mm-hmm.
To make that, we're going to have all the dialogue recorded by the end of September.
Yeah.
Which is doable. And if we miss it, it's not the end of the world. It's the goal we want to go for.
Yeah.
So, but look for it soon. Family Skeletons. It's a thing that's happening.
Yes.
So with that, if you want to drop us a line, get a message to us, you can go to our website, fanboynewsnetwork.com, and just leave us a message in the comment section. Until then, I am Jeff Harris.
And I'm Ian Crowfeather.
And theoretically, Daniel should be back next episode. Until then, you all take care.
Good night.
This program is produced by Jeff Harris and Fanboy News Network, and is copyright 2016 to Jeff Harris and Fanboy News Network. All rights are reserved, including rights to copy and redistribute this program. All music in this podcast comes from the Footage Firm and is used under a royalty-free license.